Professors FM.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast, brought to you by Emory's Marketing Analytics Center. My name is Mike Lewis. I'm joined by Doug Battle. Doug, NBA playoffs, but it's too early.
It's too early. Yeah, they started. I love the NBA playoffs. It's exciting. I do feel like the play-in adds a little bit of excitement. Maybe didn't have the same buzz this year that it had in its inaugural season, but our teams are established. There's always like a game one upset or two where talking heads start getting all excited, and inevitably the team with the 1-0 start is going to end up losing 4-1 in a series. So like you said, it's too early, but it's a great time of year for basketball. I'm missing Luka Doncic, Mike. It feels like the young golden boy of the NBA.
Middle age now, right?
Well, middle age. I don't know about that. He's still pretty young.
Like 4 or 5 years in now? 4 years
in? Yeah, 4 or 5 years in, but he started when he was like 17. Yeah. But it feels wide open. Like it feels like I saw Phoenix lost game one, and that's a team I feel like, who knows, they could win the finals. Golden State's down one to the Kings. That's a team I could see in the finals. Both conferences, looking across the board, it just seems like I don't really know who the favorite. I mean, Boston and Milwaukee, I think, in the East are probably the favorites. In the West, though, it feels so wide open, more so than previous years. And I think that's a good thing for the NBA. It'll be interesting to see, though, how the ratings fare. I will add this. The Lakers winning game one against the Grizzlies. I actually like the Lakers in that series as a 7 seed. I think the Lakers are a team that has underperformed for much of the season and much of LeBron's reign in Los Angeles. But when they're healthy, Anthony Davis and LeBron James, that's a pretty tough duo alone. And I think their supporting cast is actually decent. So Memphis is a team that I feel may have overachieved in the regular season. So we'll see. That's a really interesting series and probably the one that's caught the most buzz in my world, Mike.
I think we're still in the part of the ramp up where the narratives are being formed. They're almost being tested out. The Lakers and the Grizzlies. I mean, in some ways, the Lakers in Memphis is the best narrative, right? It's Ja Morant who, you know, I mean, you mentioned Luka Doncic, and we've always, the NBA players were always fixated on that, right? It's always Trae Young's breaking through. Luka Doncic's breaking through, right? Ja Morant's in that category.
So I mean, of those guys, if you look at team success, Ja Morant is the guy this year who is the guy.
Okay. And in terms of marketing success, he is not. I mean, he might actually end up being the guy, right? But, I mean, if I'm just looking at this as the NBA brands, right? And, like, there's a Michael Jordan shoe movie right now, right? Ja Morant is the best story. It's the most interesting story in the first round for a bunch of reasons against LeBron, the king of the NBA brands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you and I are both probably, I think you're a little more enthusiastic about it, but I think we're both on the same page. It's like, we got to let this whole thing marinate for a couple of games. And we got to see if the Boston crowd gets mad at Trae Young, right? If what kind of interesting things start to pop out here.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm talking about how even it feels across the board, talking about a 7 seed Lakers potentially taking it to the 2 seed Grizzlies. The 8 seed Heat beat the 1 seed Bucks in round one. The one series I feel really confident about, if I'm a betting man, is Nuggets Timberwolves. You got the least disciplined team in basketball in Minnesota, who recently had one player punch another player and another player in the same game break his hand for punching a wall, taking on Jokic, Jamal Murray, and the Nuggets, to me, they almost feel like what the Spurs used to be. They win a lot of basketball games in what's perceived as boring fashion. Lots of moving the ball. Jokic isn't exactly perceived as the flashy superstar, but they win a lot of basketball games, and that's a team I feel really good about in round one with their matchup against the Timberwolves.
Nothing would make me happier. Look, if I could have anything out of this NBA playoffs, it would be for Denver to go on a run. I would love to see ESPN have to spend every morning talking about the Joker, right? And have him actually get some national airtime. I think that would be tremendous because it is, look, it's a strange deal, right? Where the guy that keeps winning the MVP, frankly, is really far from being a household name. I mean, NBA fans know him, but he's not. Yeah, he does not get anywhere near the press or the ESPN coverage or the highlights. I mean, usually when they mention him, it's to attack him and say someone else should be the MVP, right? I'm pulling up an ESPN article where they're listing the 25 best players in the playoffs. Where do you think Jokic is ranked by ESPN on this?
Like 7 or something?
He's 5th. Absurd.
5th, yeah, it's absurdly low.
Nothing would make me happier than to see him go on this deep run. And again, it would feel a little bit more legit. And so it's,
yeah.
Okay, so Doug, I am now firmly on the page of rooting for the Denver Nuggets in the 2023 NBA playoffs.
I love it. Yeah, I think Jamal Murray is a player who, in a lot of years historically in the NBA, would have been the best point guard or one of the best point guards. But there are so many all-time great guards in the league right now that he's kind of forgotten, and you forget about it until crunch time comes for Denver. And more times than not, it feels like Jamal Murray is the guy who is making the difference at the end of games. I think one of the reasons people overlook Denver is because it's a big man dominated team, much like the 76ers in the East. And we talked about this in March Madness, Mike, where, you know, college basketball teams like Purdue dominate in the regular season with their post play. And for whatever reason, come March Madness, it's all about the guards. And it's felt that way in the NBA over recent years, where Jokic wins MVP and the Nuggets are a 1 seed or a 2 seed. And come playoff time, a team like Portland with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum a couple years back knocks them out. Teams like the Warriors go on tears, really, who haven't invested much in their bigs at all over the years in their dynasty run. It's felt so guard dominated. And this year, it feels like there's a chance. Denver on one side with Jokic, yeah, and Philadelphia, yeah, on the other end with Joel Embiid, two MVP candidates.
Dick Vitale potentially out of the retirement home talking about aircraft carriers.
Yeah, big man basketball might be back. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying there's a chance, and it's not flashy. I don't think the media would love that. I personally am all for it. I want to see Jokic versus Embiid in the finals.
Yeah. Okay. So we've now got a rooting interest in this, because I want to see that too. Well, this kind of, yeah, throwback basketball, like the early 1990s without the bruises. But yep. Yeah, beautiful.
Yep. Yeah. They call a lot more fouls now. It'd be a lot of and ones for Jokic and Embiid that would have not gotten that third point years back. Also, even if it had been called a foul years back, the bigs couldn't hit the free throws like Jokic and Joel Embiid can. So these guys can shoot from three. I mean, I think it's their time to be in center stage bigs in the NBA. So that's what I'm following. But like you said, we're kind of waiting for the stories to unfold here in the NBA playoffs.
Hey,
but we've got a lot of stories unfolding.
Yes, because even though it's the NBA playoffs, it's still mostly about the NFL.
Yeah, we've got stories unfolding like we're in the middle of the NFL season.
I think off-season. NFL has almost hit the point of being like professional wrestling. It's almost like the offseason is better than the actual matches. I mean, we had the quarterback controversy, not really controversy, but Jalen Hurts with a massive extension,
yes,
the highest paid. I think they've listed now as he'll be the highest paid quarterback and the highest paid player in the NFL next year. But Doug, even beyond that, and we'll get back to the quarterbacks because they're always center stage, the sale of the Washington Commanders. So Dan Snyder, I mean, think about what happened. One of the true marquee brands, he takes it over, finds every incorrect free agent, drafts wrong at the quarterback position every time, digs in his heels on a naming controversy for seemingly decades, then changes it, then changes it again, and then walks away.
I love it. I will say, if I'm Dan Snyder, maybe, I don't know what their valuation is or what it sold for, but I imagine the valuation was higher before the two name changes. I probably would have sold and gotten canceled just purely from a business standpoint a couple of years back. I think that would have been the smarter move than what he did. But to be fair, there's a lot of moves that weren't smart during his tenure as owner of the Washington Commander football team, R words.
I want to write a Harvard business. I want to write a business school case about Dan Snyder's management of the Washington football franchise. Right. But it would almost read as a parody, wouldn't it? I mean, literally nothing went right. And I'm not even saying it was all on him. I mean, I think clearly after all the fights and all the battles, it seemed like there was then endless NFL investigations. And remember the leak of the Gruden's email?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in addition to him falling all over himself, they were clearly trying to push him. Someone was clearly trying to push him down as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's all on him, but I also think he is the common denominator of all their issues over the decades. Okay. And he's the one that fan base hates that man.
It's tempting to be the only person in America to defend Dan Snyder, but I can't even do it, Doug.
Yeah, I don't know what comes next. It's not like getting a new owner in football. It's not like when Alabama hired Nick Saban as their head coach, it was like, oh, now they're going to be good. Now they're going to go on a tear. Like, yeah, NFL can be, there can be lots of changes before something happens. As a Giants fan, I've seen several general managers and head coaches post Tom Coughlin era, each one promising championships, promising new hope and fan base getting excited. And the bottom line is when you don't have a good roster, when you don't have a good salary cap situation, good draft pick situation, it takes a long time to turn the ship in professional football. Let's appreciate
what Snyder did. If he had sold the team when it was still the Washington Redskins, then the new owner could have come in and said, we're going to drop that. We're going to become the Washington football team. Clean slate.
Yeah.
But Snyder had to burden this new ownership group with two name changes before he left.
He didn't leave them in a great position. My point about that was simply in regards to the brand value. I imagine with your like fandom studies that the Washington R words were ranking much higher than the Washington Commanders have been.
I know, but here's the thing. I think when you're buying a team in the NFL, it's almost like you're buying the market, right? Mm-hmm. The NFL has all the revenue sharing. And so, you know, they're going to get that TV deal money that more than covers the salary cap. So then you start to dig into this. And I mean, it's such an amazing market to buy into, right? I mean, you just think, would you rather own the Nashville franchise or the Jacksonville franchise or the Washington, D.C. franchise? Where, I mean, you can just imagine the sponsorship dollars or opportunities are off the charts, right? I mean, maybe there could be some more if the brand hadn't been damaged. It'd be interesting to look up how much Snyder, I mean, what did Snyder pay for it, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me try and Google that you have the mic for a minute. Let me Google that.
Yeah. Also, I'm kind of curious if the new ownership comes in and says, we don't like what they've done with the brand, and we actually have our own ideas. We're going to view all of this investment in marketing and branding as a sunk cost and completely rebrand as the Bombers or the something else. And one other point about, to your point about the market, on one hand, yes, it's an enticing market. But on the flip side, Mike,
okay.
In this day and age with controversy surrounding everything that happens in sports, is there a more volatile place you could be and you could run a sports organization than Washington, D.C.?
Is there any place, any stadium where there are more lobbyists willing to spend enormous dollars on hospitality suites to entertain Congress people than Washington? He paid $800 million, a record price for a U.S. sports franchise in 1999. Now, he was only part of the group, but I mean, what a punchline to this whole story that he may have made $5.2 billion after this epic run of management, this demonstration of management excellence.
A masterclass, if you will. I want masterclass to get Dan Snyder to do a sports business masterclass. I will pay money to watch.
Yeah.
Because you can learn exactly what not to do.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. The other big news in the NFL relating to quarterbacks was the Jalen Hurts extension. It's interesting in that it was really he becomes the highest paid quarterback in the NFL next year. The guaranteed money is not at the level of Deshaun Watson. There's a bit of a controversy because the Ravens have apparently offered Lamar Jackson more guaranteed money than was offered by Hurts. But it's interesting on a couple levels. Hurts had a great season, but it's only one season, right? And he was doing it on a Super Bowl caliber team. Yep. And so in some ways, it's probably a little bit early to reset the market. By resetting the market, and it's not clear what number these quarterbacks are looking at. They're looking at the guaranteed dollars. They're also looking at the total dollars. And so what does this mean for Joe Burrow, for Lamar Jackson? Again, every Justin one Herbert. Of these things, yeah, every one of these signings makes things more interesting going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I look back a couple of years. I remember Patrick Mahomes signing his big deal and feeling like, wow, that's a lot. I don't even know for him if I would lock in that much money and that much cap space for one player. And Patrick Mahomes is leading a team to a Super Bowl almost every year. Now, just maybe two, three years later, Mahomes' deal looks pretty good. It looks pretty reasonable relative to the rest of the league. Deshaun Watson in front of him, Kyler Murray in front of him, Aaron Rodgers, aging Aaron Rodgers, disgruntled Aaron Rodgers in front of him, and now Jalen Hurts. And so this Jalen Hurts deal right now, it feels kind of questionable. I don't know, maybe 2-3 years from now, he's like the seventh highest paid quarterback in the league, and he's on that same deal because you got guys like Herbert, you got guys like Joe Burrow. Who knows what happens with Lamar Jackson? I mean, that's the big story this offseason, and I think everyone's keeping their eye on that after this deal with Hurts. But I mean, Trevor Lawrence will be due for a big deal in a couple years. Several of these guys were Jalen Hurts. He probably, like, over the course of this contract, even though right now he's the top guy, I wouldn't be surprised over the course of the contract if he's really, like, maybe the between fifth and tenth highest paid quarterback in the NFL, which feels a little more reasonable if you're an Eagles fan.
No, I agree with that. It's a market that's clearly flawed at this point, where basically the highest paid guy is whoever signed last.
Yeah.
Right. And there seems to be so little difference between doesn't seem to be a lot of difference between a guy that commands $45 million a year and a guy that commands $50 million a year. Right. Right. So the market doesn't seem to be truly.
Well, I mean, Mahomes is 45 and Jalen Hurts is 50 right now. Right. So.
But I think also, I mean, I think some of these guys could like Carr step down a little bit. But I think at one point, Derek Carr was one of the two or three highest paid quarterbacks in the league. Right.
And I mean, Dak Prescott's tied at seventh now with Daniel Jones and Matt Stafford. But those guys are. I mean, I believe Prescott was much higher at the time of his deal as well.
Yeah, and that's only, I think, 2 years into the deal, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the market is moving too fast, and it's moving they're so fixated on this idea of these comparables that it's like, I mean, in some ways, it's the way the NFL teams or whenever a team is sold, basically look at the last team sold, add a premium to it, and you end up with a market that just kind of spirals out of control. I mean, one of the guys who is now in the NFC is a guy named Baker Mayfield, who is replacing a guy named Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Tom Brady, where did Tom Brady rank in terms of the top paid quarterbacks? He never seemed to be sort of in that elite top two or three group. Brady's gone. They signed Baker Mayfield for $4 million for next year, Doug.
Yeah, Tom Brady, I don't think he has to worry. That guy's an influencer at this point, killing the game on TikTok. And he's already inked the biggest contract in broadcast history for whenever he starts broadcasting. He's going to make more money than he did as a football player, just like Tony Romo is. And so I'd love to see, I know like Forbes, when they do the list of richest athletes, they have their salaries, but they also have their endorsement deals. And for NBA players, often the endorsements outweigh the salaries, guys like LeBron James, for those top couple of players. I wonder how much Mahomes is making and a guy like Tom Brady is making relative to Kyler Murray or Sean Watson, Jalen Hurts, some of these guys who have more money in contract, but obviously they're not getting the advertising deals that Brady and Mahomes are getting.
But Doug, Tom Brady's last 4 years were his highest paid years in the league. He made $23 million in 2019 for New England, then went up to 28.3 for the Bucks, 39.4 in 2021 for the Bucks, and then 30 million last year.
So Brady's been a bargain his whole career.
He truly has.
I think that's part of the magic, though. I think the fact that the Patriots for so long were able to not invest. They were able to have a top quarterback without putting a third of their salary cap into a single player, allow them to surround him with much better talent than what, let's say, a guy like Mahomes is going to have for the remainder of his career in Kansas City, although he's had great talent and they've drafted very well in Kansas City. But the Patriots were never tied down to a bad deal or to even a good deal. I mean, any deal is a good deal with Tom Brady. If you're paying him $50 million, that's a good deal. It's Tom Brady. He's winning championships. But would he have been winning championships had they been paying him $50 million and had weaker offensive lines, weaker playmakers, weaker defenses?
But it also illustrates how the quarterback market has gone awry. Right.
Yes.
You go back and you look at Brady in 2013 and 2014. He was making, well, $12 million in 2012, $13 million in 2013. So you go back a decade ago, and now the salary market has gone up fourfold from there, right? That's not what has happened to regular people's incomes, right? And that's not what's happened to the NFL salary cap, right? So it's we've seen these, whatever, these market forces really push everything towards these guys. And again, I mean, this is a larger point. I'm not convinced that this is the right look. Tom Brady deserves to get paid. So many of these record-setting quarterbacks, Kyler Murray, I don't know why I'm picking on him, Derek Carr, these guys do not deserve to get paid at those kind of elite levels, right?
Yeah, and I think the most interesting one to me is Daniel Jones, because he's kind of the classic, well, we don't know that he wouldn't be great if he had a great supporting cast or great talent around. He's been dealt a tough hand in New York for the entirety of his career thus far. And he's done an admirable job with what he's had, but has he earned top 10 quarterback money? I don't know. And maybe his top 10 very quickly becomes top 20 and it feels a little bit more reasonable over the next 2 years or so.
Yes, but Doug, he was smart. I mean, here's another fun thing in all this market. I think these deals are going to get shorter, right? Because now you want to sign a lot of them, right? This idea of like that Mahomes deal of, I want to lock in my whole career.
I want a 10-year, yeah.
I'm going to make $500 million living kind of fat. It's like, no. I want to make $250 for the next 3 years. Then I want to make $350 for the 3 years after that, right?
And that's where, like, with Mahomes' 10-year deal, is he going to end up being like the 15th highest paid quarterback in the league by the end of his deal?
How? I think it's
because he's like, already at 7, right? Or he's like 5 or 6.
Negotiation be ugly or not is the key, I think.
He's at 5. So he went from 1 to 5 in like a year or two. And we've got, like I said, Joe Burrow. I don't know what Josh Allen's situation is as far as his deal, but he's the 6th highest paid quarterback in the league as well. So
he's pretty recent too, though. I think he was a year or two.
I mean, that's definitely not his rookie contract. So yeah, I don't know. I think the Mahomes deal, there's two sides to it. Like from a risk management standpoint, Mahomes could have torn his Achilles on both legs the next season and been done forever and had all that guaranteed money for 10 years, which is crazy. Like that's a crazy amount of commitment by Kansas City. But on the flip side, when you lock in something long term and when you lock in something sooner, like Lamar Jackson, if he had signed 2 years ago and extended with the Ravens, he wouldn't have made as much money as he's going to make regardless of if he gets what he wants. It's still going to be better than what he would have gotten. And so players that roll the dice like that are going to win big. And we've yet to see anyone lose big. Imagine if Lamar Jackson had an RG3 type situation, that would certainly change the way these guys are approaching it. But it seems like players are getting a little bit more willing to roll the dice and a little bit, I don't want to say greedy, but they're being tactical and they know what they're doing and they want the most money they can possibly get.
Yeah, well, in individual specific, right? I mean, and again, injuries are hard to predict because you go down the path of talking about like a Josh Allen versus a Tua, right? And then the strategy might be very different in terms of how many of these deals you want to get. But like I said, with the way these things are escalating, it's almost like you do have to increasingly roll the dice, right? Because keep making those guaranteed $120 million. Like they always talk about like that. You don't want to sign a contract, running back to a contract 2. Maybe you don't want to sign quarterbacks to contract 3. I think some of that's going to disappear now, right? Because it is going to be just 3 years, renegotiate, 3 years, renegotiate. And like I said, I think we're going to see a billion. I think the first guy that earns $1 billion in salaries is already in the league. I don't know who it is. It's probably Mahomes, but that guy's currently playing.
Yeah, Mahomes. I think Burrow is going to have a shot before it's all said and done. I imagine Cincinnati's going to be pretty aggressive with him. And so, and then that next year with Justin Herbert kind of knocking on the door. And I don't know that he's established himself to make that kind of prediction that he's going to make that kind of career money. But his next contract, I expect him to reset the market.
But that's the thing. He could make that kind of money even if he doesn't have the success of those guys, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like you just have to have the promise and have the that near level. It seems like I guess that's what I keep coming back to. The premium for getting to the Super Bowl every other year and winning it often seems very small compared to that guy that gets you into the playoffs every year.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the NFC South.
NFC South.
Okay, so at the top of this division, the all-time great seems to have finally retired for good, now doing social media on the beach with his friends, playing football, oddly, right? I don't know. Is Brady going to join the TV booth next season, or is he going to take a little bit of time?
I haven't heard any kind of discussion. I do think he's going to be phenomenal. From what I've seen, behind a microphone, the guy is natural. He's got the looks for it. He is very savvy with his social media, particularly TikTok, which I think is a good sign for his career because he knows how to appeal to every generation. And he's a guy that I think a lot of people want to hate him because people pulled against him. People were tired of him winning Super Bowls. And yet he's still kind of universally admired. Like he's universally pulled against outside of the like Patriots fans or Bucks fans, but he's universally admired.
I actively disliked him simply from being a Michigan quarterback. Right.
So, yeah. Well, I think Michigan fans disliked him too. So it's weird how he went from universally disliked by Michigan haters and Michigan fans to universally admired. And I think that's going to continue.
You're a pretty boy. You got to stick around for a long time. There's your marker.
Yeah. Yeah. Stick around for a while and find the fountain of youth.
Okay.
And win a bunch of rings.
Tampa has replaced their $30 million Tom Brady quarterback with a $4 million Baker Mayfield. Is that, in fact, the opposite?
I don't. I kind of like that move for the Bucs.
Okay, what do you like about it?
Well, last year when Mayfield came into Los Angeles, season was pretty much over for the Rams. And he had like 1 week of practice, got thrown into playing, Stafford out with an injury, and played with a lot of heart. And when I saw his press conference after that game, that's a guy who I remember when he was at Oklahoma, Davin Bellamy at Georgia telling him, humble yourself, humble yourself. He was too cocky. He needed to be humbled. And he seems like he has humility, but he still has confidence. He seems like he's grown up quite a bit and he's always been a gamer. He's never been one with like the crazy off the charts Anthony Richardson measurables. But he's a gamer. And so to take in kind of a refurbished quarterback, if you will, a guy who failed at a place where everyone failed and then kind of has bounced around and ends up on a $4 million contract. I think 2 years ago, he would have been demanding a $30 or $40 million contract. And I don't hate it. If it doesn't work, you go draft another great quarterback. But as far as rehabilitation projects go at quarterback, he's one of the ones I'd be a lot more optimistic about him than guys in the past, guys like Josh Rosen, who by the way predicted he would win or set out to win more rings than Tom Brady. Yeah, so I don't hate that move in this quarterback market. You look at the diminishing performance between Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield, and is that worth $36-40 million difference?
Yeah. Well, look, I understand where you're coming from. And I definitely have sympathy for the idea that you want to look, if the last few years have taught us anything, is that there's certain guys that do well with age at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. Right? And so is it that kind of maturity, that kind of there's certain traits that I think help you perform well as a young quarterback and different ones as an older quarterback. Is Mayfield that guy? I'm actually kind of, in some ways, I'm kind of with you. where it's probably worth it taking one of these guys that was like a top five pick and kind of bombs out, because the physical tools are probably there. And so if it's a matter of coaching or game reps or just kind of growing into your 30s and that type of mental maturity issue, then you may as well do it. And at $4 million, that's becoming a rounding error in these quarterback contracts. Now,
yeah, that's backup quarterback money.
It's barely that, right? I mean, it's Mayfield had, I mean, four touchdowns, two interceptions for Los Angeles. Like, but I mean, in some ways, it's hard for him to blame Mayfield, right? Because Cleveland doesn't seem to do well, right? That organization seems to create just endless havoc. And then the Panthers also don't seem to be particularly, they had Darnold and they had Mayfield on that team. And then
Cam Newton fizzled out there.
Yeah. I mean, they don't seem to have a plan or the stability that Bill Belichick brought to Tom Brady. So. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mayfield, another part of his story is he's an underdog. He was a walk-on at Oklahoma. He was overlooked. He backed up different now NFL quarterbacks in college before getting his chance to play. And I think he's been written off before, and I think that's where he thrives. And so I actually view a written off Baker Mayfield as more valuable than a coming out of college, number one pick in the draft, Heisman winning Baker Mayfield. And so I like it. I like it. If I'm a Bucs fan, I'm great with that. As far as if you're not going to have Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, or I almost would rather have a guy like Mayfield who's like low risk, but potentially high reward, than to take on a player like many of these quarterbacks in the league where you know what you're getting and you're paying them like they're going to win you Super Bowls, even though you know they're not going to. And so I like that. I like that for Mayfield, and I like that for the Bucks. I think it's a good pair.
Okay. Well, he's cost controlled.
Yeah.
He's come back to being cost controlled. I think you could ask questions about, like, I would ask questions about how well liked he is in these locker rooms. Right. How is he viewed by his? That's something we're never going to be able to observe from the outside. But the level of brashness, is that a positive in the locker room or is it a negative in the locker room? But that's something that the executives know that we're never going to know. That gets us, of course, to the Carolina Panthers. Spectacular. Right. So they go out and they get Sam Darnold, who had fizzled out with the Jets. Then they go out and they get Baker Mayfield, who had fizzled out from the Browns. So they got a number one pick on the team. I think Darnold was number three or number four. On top of that, then they draft. Who's the kid they drafted? Like a third round pick as well?
Are you talking about Matt Corral?
Yeah, who gets hurt.
Forgot about him.
Right?
I predicted before the season they would have three starting quarterbacks. And I thought Matt Corral was going to end up being the guy at the end of the season, but
after all that,
put that down.
Then they end up trading to the Bears for the number one overall pick, and seemingly from looking at all the mock drafts, don't even know which one they want.
Right? I mean, I have to think. I saw today that Bryce Young canceled the rest of his pre-draft visits, so I think he believes he's going number one, which is probably telling. I think Bryce Young's going to be their guy. I like CJ Stroud. I know for a while people, I mean, you're right. When they made that trade, it wasn't like they're trading for Bryce Young. It was like they want to have their pick of Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud. But there was no indication as to whether any one of those guys. I heard rumors that, well, the general manager likes Young, but the owner likes Stroud and the coach likes Richardson. And so there might be some division within that Panthers ownership and management. We'll see what happens. I saw Bryce Young recently compared to Steph Curry on turf. If he's Steph Curry on turf, that's good news for Panthers fans. It remains to be seen, though. And the Panthers gave up quite a bit for that pick, including their top wide receiver. And so not necessarily positioning a guy like Young to come in and succeed. But the one quarterback if I'm a Panthers fan, I would not be excited about would be Will Levis. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think Panthers fans would freak out. I think the whole sports world would lose their minds over that pick.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fascinating. I've seen some mock drafts that have the first four players being selected as all quarterbacks at this point. That would, I think, involve at least a trade at the number three with the Arizona. I don't think Arizona's picking one, but I agree with you. I mean, it seems like the way these mock drafts are going, that it's either Stroud or Bryce Young, and then Anthony Richardson and Will Levis, each either very high, each potentially top five picks, or maybe falling all the way down to 10 or 12. If there is something going on here from a psychological standpoint, I do suspect that there's, and it kind of goes back to the way the salary market has gone, that there's so much emphasis on the quarterback position that so many dollars go into guys that might be capable of winning a Super Bowl. And the same thing I think happens with the draft, where it's like you, there's probably no position where you're more likely to see someone reach. I think you mentioned Josh Rosen, right? Or is it Josh Rosen? Yeah,
Josh Rosen.
Yeah. But I mean, you can go back to just about every, well, with Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, these guys do not seem to very often play out to be legitimate top five picks. So the idea that there's four of these guys with, I don't know, what did Will Levis do this year at Kentucky, right? How'd that season play out? I mean, okay, it'd be Florida.
Beat Anthony Richardson.
And we know that Florida didn't have a great season. Yeah. So these guys have not won. They didn't win at the college level. So, I mean, and again, this is no criticism of these gentlemen, but I think there's really this tendency to talk people into, well, we got to take a shot. We got to make a reach on these guys. And very often that's where you end up hurting your franchise for a long time.
Particularly when you have a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, the whole first round of the NFL draft is usually so loaded. I mean, there's future Pro Bowlers that get taken in later rounds, but you've got like a 75% chance of drafting a future Pro Bowler if you draft just the best available player at any given pick in the top 20. And so to reach for a guy who may not even be a starting caliber player in 2 years, you're giving up quite a lot for that player. It's not just, oh, it's just a draft pick. Like, you're giving up, you're passing on the best wide receiver in the league in 5 years. And you're starting left tackle for the next decade.
I just pulled up the CBS Sports mock draft, and they have Will Levis going to Tampa Bay at number 19. I love that idea. Baker Mayfield.
He's getting beat out. He's getting beat out by Mayfield.
Yeah, we go from Tom Brady 1 year to Will Levis and Baker Mayfield.
He's getting beat out by Mayfield in Tampa.
Yeah, I don't know. I got mixed feelings. I mean, the Will Levis has become this, I don't know, what do the kids say, Doug? He's a meme at this point. They got video of the guy putting mayonnaise in his coffee, of eating the banana with the peel. I don't know what this is. And I don't know, is he doing this for the camera? Is he doing this for social media? I mean, I think you got to look at that kind of stuff and kind of go, this is weird. Okay. So then you ask yourself the question of, is being weird a disqualification for being a guy that leads an NFL team to greatness? I mean, are you a coffee drinker, Doug?
On occasion.
You ever thought about putting mayonnaise in there?
It's not something that's ever crossed my mind.
So it's almost like he's doing this as a goof. Okay, so it's like the guy's got a unique personality. Apparently he's built like a linebacker.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it kind of looks like Tim Tebow as far as his physique. And I watched Will Levis in college a good bit. And first time I saw him, I was like, this kid's going to play in the NFL. He took it, that Georgia defense that just had their way with everyone, including Bryce Young in the national championship 2021. Season, Will Levis was the only quarterback at the point in the season when he was playing Georgia that I saw give that defense a hard time. And I was like, who is this guy? And where is he from? How is he projected in the NFL? Is he in the transfer portal next year? Because I'd love to have him on my team. So he did. He's not just a specimen. He had moments of, just like Anthony Richardson had his moments of just, wow, this guy's really got a lot of potential. And the thing with Levis is he's actually a very vocal guy. He has those kind of like traditional leadership capabilities where he's yelling at guys. He's giving the speech. He's fired up. He's playing through injury. So he's got some intangibles in addition to some tangibles.
But we don't know what he's yelling. right?
Yeah, well, we don't know, and it doesn't matter when over the course, you might have your moment where you look like a great quarterback. I remember Jacob Eason throwing some balls and being like, oh my gosh, this guy is going to be Peyton Manning based on one throw. But when you look at the body of work over the course of his career, and there's some major concerns with Levis. And so,
do you remember Laremy Tunsil?
I certainly remember Laremy Tunsil.
Okay.
How could I forget?
Okay. And for those of you that don't remember, just as the NFL draft was going down, there's a picture of him in a gas mask inhaling marijuana. Is that fair?
That's, okay. Accurate.
So it's like these things, and Tunsil has had a great career. I think he's been a Pro Bowl multiple times. And so he's definitely played out. And so I don't want to sort of gloss over the weirdness of Will Levis. Is being weird something that you, I mean, and so here's the like,
Stetson,
I think
Bennett's weird. He won national championships.
At Georgia. Who's weird?
Stetson, by all accounts.
As weird as Levis, though? And so it's like,
I think so.
Eccentric, quirky, and weird.
Rodrigo Blankenship, great kicker in Georgia. Okay. Of course, his NFL career hasn't been.
I think that's the danger, right? So it's like, you've got to figure out what this information means. And again, we're just looking at a couple of Instagram posts, so I don't know what it means. The kid might be fine, just a little bit strange, but the kid might be kind of bat something, right?
Yeah, with Levis, it's like, I personally, if my team takes him, I am not happy. I'm pretty livid about it. But with that said, I can see where people are coming from when they say, well, Josh Allen wasn't a finished product. He was a big physical guy with a big arm who had some leadership capabilities, but also had some bad tendencies that he needed to be coached out of, and paired with the right coach over the course of 3-4 years, developed into an elite quarterback. That's how somebody views Will Levis and sees the potential, as well as Anthony Richardson. Okay. And I think both of those players are put in the same category because they're more or less viewed as developmental projects, more so than Stroud, who won a lot of football games, Bryce Young, who won a lot of football games, who performed, both of whom performed really well in the college football playoff on the biggest stage.
At pick three or four, right?
Yeah.
Developmental prospect at pick three. Okay. So moving along, as we got to get through this, the New Orleans Saints. So the Saints have been active in the offseason, and they signed one of the guys we've talked a little bit about. So they brought in Derek Carr at a not top of the market contract, but a healthy contract. And Carr is the guy I think of in terms of getting paid multiple times. Signed a big deal with the Raiders. That kind of fizzled out. I mean, I struggle with the fact that it seems like Carr kind of quit on that team at the end.
Yeah.
But that seems to be okay with the NFL. Interest from it seemed like the Jets and some multiple teams, and getting about another $100 million or $90 million, I think, in guaranteed money. So the New Orleans Saints will come into the season with Jameis Winston and Derek Carr is a starter and Winston is the backup. Decent? Disappointing?
All I know is that Derek Carr needs to get an endorsement deal with Maybelline or someone who makes mascara, because I don't know if I've ever seen the guy. I don't know if he actually wears mascara, but he definitely looks like he has on mascara at all times, and I think he thinks it's intimidating.
Mascara is a word that you don't think about trying to spell until you do.
I don't know if it's just the way his eyes are, but he does that look all the time, like he's in the zone.
Dude, it's like Blades of Glory when they came out in eye makeup.
I still don't know if he wears actual eyeliner, but I think he's got to. I don't know how your eyes look like that without it. So anyway, that's all beside the point. A quarterback that wears makeup and quits on his team, I don't know if I want that personally as my quarterback. But with that said, the Saints are a team that have jumped from Drew Brees to Jameis Winston and a handful of others. And so I don't know that Teddy Bridgewater was QB1 at one point, and they certainly haven't found their post Drew Brees solution. It's crazy because a couple years back under Sean Payton, I would have said you could plug and play Carr in that Drew Brees offense and he'd do just as well. I mean, they were such a well-oiled machine, but at this point in Carr's career and this point, having seen that maybe the system isn't so great that any quarterback just works in New Orleans post or the organization or whatnot, and they've kind of reverted to pre-Drew Brees performance. And so I think he's going to do a mediocre job, and I think that's what everyone expects.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Doug.
I think that's how he's getting paid.
I'm a little distracted looking at Derek Carr pictures and seeing some of the links that come up. I don't even know what to do with some of the links, but there's some, apparently he's popular on Reddit as well. Okay. And oh, man. At the bottom of that division, though, I think there's a three-way tie for, I mean, what a division, 8-9. And then I think 3-7-10 teams, the Atlanta Falcons. I think the Falcons are staying put with Desmond Ridder as their guy for the near term. I think we had speculated, and I think a lot of people had speculated, that Lamar Jackson seems like a likely fit for the Falcons. I don't know if that's kind of the legacy, kind of this cognitive bias of, well, Michael Vick was a great player for the Falcons.
Yeah, right.
But definitely.
That felt like a match made in heaven, though, and it's not happening. Apparently, Falcons are not interested. And, I mean, we understand why, of course, but financially. Yeah. But it did just seem like that would be what the Falcons would do, and that would be where Lamar Jackson would go. It felt right.
Well, and you think about it, I mean, again, sort of the complexity of building a team. And if that team had been built for largely a guy like Matt Ryan, standard drop back passer, then switching gears to a Lamar Jackson might be more of an overhaul than folks think. But, you know, I actually don't know. I'm kind of surprised that the Falcons haven't done more exploration in the quarterback market, because when I think across the league, the Falcons aren't investing very much in that position. It's almost shocking how little they're investing in that position in terms of both draft picks and salaries. The Falcons are probably an outlier at this point relative to just about everyone else. So are they sort of looking at this multiple seasons, wanting to clear salary cap before they dive in? Do they want to play the cost-controlled third-round quarterback pick card for a while, see how that plays out? It's different. So, I mean, it's different
in the NFL, but it's kind of consistent with one strategy we've talked about, which is, if you know the guys available in free agency aren't your guy long term, that's going to win you Super Bowls, cough, Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, some of these guys we've mentioned already in this podcast, and you don't want to lock them into deals that are going to hinder you from paying the guy who is your guy. Maybe you do take a chance on a third round guy and figure, worst case scenario, he's like a poor man's Baker Mayfield. Now, and then when your guy comes around, you got the number one pick and you got money.
I correct myself, because they did go out and they signed Taylor Heinicke,
who I really like, by the way.
But it's kind of a forgettable. It's almost in the vein of going out and getting, like, who was the guy the Steelers got? The guy that had played for the Bears?
Trubisky.
And again, I'm almost sort of, my memory's not the best, but it's also kind of, there's sort of this kind of forgettable categories of players. And I don't actually mean that to be insulting. I mean, forgettable in terms of how the fans think about it. Of like, yeah, this guy that's not going particularly anywhere, kind of a place filler.
Yeah, I think I actually really like Taylor Heinicke. Plays with a lot of heart. And I think he's the better quarterback this year for Atlanta between he and Ridder. I don't think either is. I think he's honestly, I could see him maybe having, like, best case scenario with him is he's like a Kurt Warner story. Like, he's got some of those intangibles that you look for. I mean, that's the best case scenario for Baker Mayfield right now, too. I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's a low percent chance of that happening. But would you rather have, I mean, I think there's a low percent chance that Derek Carr has that kind of career. And he's demanding quite a bit more money, I assume. And so I don't hate that deal for Atlanta. I think they're probably going to go with, like, low cost at quarterback and not make a heavy investment until they know. If they got their shot at a Justin Herbert, I would imagine they go all in. If they got their shot at a Joe Burrow, which isn't going to happen, I imagine they go all in. And if they get a number one pick in the draft, I don't think there's going to be a quarterback controversy, because I don't think they're going to have a Baker Mayfield or a Derek Carr on the roster in Atlanta. So I don't hate that strategy. And I mean, short term, it's no fun. There's nothing to really be excited about if you're a Falcons fan. I am curious this year, 8th pick in the draft right now. They might trade that, but 8th pick in the draft, you're looking at a situation where potentially if Will Levis or Anthony Richardson drops to 8, do they feel like, wow, this guy could have gone 4th or 3rd? This is a value pick. I go ahead and bring in a third quarterback, or do they? I kind of, for whatever reason, I could see them going with Jalen Carter. I could see him dropping to 8. I actually could see him dropping further than that out of Georgia.
Just a value pick for a developmental prospect at the number 8 slot in the NFL draft. potentially bypassing the number one defender, a monstrous defensive tackle from the Nationals.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I could see that happening. I think Falcons fans would lose their minds with either of those quarterbacks because Falcons fans are Georgia fans mostly, like for the most part. There's a couple like Alabama, but from, I mean, the majority of Falcons fans are Georgia football fans. You can't say that the other way around, but the majority of Falcons fans are Georgia football fans, and they have watched their team crush Anthony Richardson and Will Levis over the last 2 years. Two, 3 years. They've seen moments from both, but they've seen ultimately happens when they face a better opponent.
And to the bottom line, how are you picking this division? Because this is an interesting division, and it was 1-8-9 team, 3-7-10 teams. Not a lot of separation. So the way you pick this division is all based on which of these guys you think is actually going to be the best quarterback, or I guess the better sort of delta in terms of quarterback from what they had last year. I'm happy to go first if you want a second.
Yeah, you got it first.
I look at this and I got to go, even though I'm not a – well, I don't know how I feel about Derek Carr now about because of the Maybelline deal. I think the Saints are probably the team to pick looking at this division in terms of this, the strength of that quarterback room. And maybe they've done an upgrade from a minus one type quarterback to a plus one type quarterback, which gets them to 9-8. I have to think the Buccaneers take a major step back. And again, we can root for Baker Mayfield, but a major step back from a plus two guy in Tom Brady to a minus two guy in Baker Mayfield. So I got the Buccaneers in last place. The Panthers, I don't know. This is sort of a complete roll of dice with this rookie quarterback coming in. And so the Panthers and the Falcons, it kind of pick them at second and third in that division. That's a strange division, Doug.
This is probably the hardest division to pick in football. Part of me is like, Carr's the most known commodity at quarterback as far as you kind of predict how that's going to go. And you just go with the Saints because of that. Part of me is like, the Panthers aren't a terrible team and they've had terrible quarterbacks. And so you plug in, maybe they find lightning in the bottle like the Washington did in year one with RG3, whether it's CJ Stroud or Bryce Young. But also we've seen first-year quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, not perform at a high level in year one. Atlanta, another team, it's like they're decent everywhere, but quarterbacks kind of non-exciting. I could, like Heinicke, if he starts for Atlanta, I could see them having some short-term success, kind of like how I view. I mean, I'm going to go with Tampa, Mike. I'm going to just say Tampa. You're the team you have going last. I have them going first, and that says all you need to know. I know I'm bucking the trend with analytics here on Baker Mayfield versus Tom Brady, but I think I was touched by his presser that one time, and I was like, he's a changed man. He's going to turn the corner. He's a good value. Tampa wins a weak division.
I mean, look, I could look at it too and saying, you know what? If there's an ideal quarterback narrative, an ideal story, it is Baker Mayfield. The ranking of the quarterback stories is probably Baker Mayfield first with Tampa, whoever the Panthers select number two, Taylor Heinicke maybe tied for two, or Desmond Ridder, so this plucky quarterback. I've got the Saints at winning the division, but that's probably the least interesting quarterback narrative. Right?
If they win, it's going to be in boring, like, yeah, they're going to lose in the first or second round of the playoffs fashion. Like, there's not going to be Super Bowl hype around the Saints with Derek Carr. If for whatever reason, doesn't generate that level of excitement.
Okay, we'll wrap it up here. So as always, a little bit more content. There's going to be a lot more content soon flooding into the website. We're about due for the NFL fandom rankings, and the next generation survey stuff will start to trickle out as soon as Professor Lewis, myself, gets through with grading many projects. And you can find us online at www.fandomanalytics.com.